And welcome back. What we're going to look at now is how you can get your phone application to persist data. I mean, the problem at the moment is when the program ends or the phone turns off or whatever, up until now we don't know how to put data in the phone that the program can pick up when it comes back. What we're going to do now is look at the techniques you can use for isolated storage. This will really become interesting and useful in the next session when we look at what happens that can cause your program to not run anymore. Because what's going to happen is when your program gets killed, or tombstone, to use a technical term.
That's what we're going to discuss, yes.
Yeah, then it'll need to put its data somewhere it can find when it comes back. And so this is really important stuff. If your application wants to persist high score tables, user settings, any kind of good stuff like that, lookup tables, all that, then this is the place you're going to put it. And so we're going to take a look at how to store data in isolated storage. And as we'll see, there's two flavors, there's two ways you can do this, but they both revolve around this technology which does the storage for us. On the slide it says, quite correctly in fact, which is nice, that we mean isolated in the context of one application versus another. It's not possible for me to write a program and make an application based on that program that can look at somebody else's storage, okay?
Well, that's right, because I mean, although the phone has 8 gigabytes of flash storage on it for all of your storage needs, and that's obviously your music from your Zoom music and your videos and your pictures, but it's also the data that your application is storing and saving on the phone. But that it sees a sandboxed file system, so if you've got two different applications on the phone, one cannot write to a file and another one would then read it. So, I mean, if they have their own isolated storage, but it is isolated to each application.
Yeah, they see a virtual storage system, which effectively is for them and them alone. They're not aware of the existence of any other app.
In fact,
as a general principle on Windows Phone, one app is completely unaware of the existence of any other.
Yep.
The only way you can make them talk is by pushing things to servers and pulling them back down again,
yep,
from the cloud or
use
somewhere.
Use the cloud, yeah.
But as far as we're concerned, what you get is two flavors of storage. You can make files and folders and a directory structure, which you can use to manage the things you want to store. Some things, lookup tables, big items of data, you may install things and set them up. Other things, point in the game you've reached, user settings, that kind of thing, smaller files, put them in different places. We also have a thing called local settings, of which more a little bit later, which is a much more lightweight storage mechanism for storing very, very simple bits of data, configuration information,
yep,
all that kind of stuff.
That's
the kind
right.
of thing that used to live in the registry in the good old days.
INI files.
INI files.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember INI files. Oh,
yeah.
We are so old. But yes, that kind of stuff lives there.
So isolated storage settings is your INI file.
Is your INI files, yeah.
Yep.
And so this whole thing sits behind a bunch of classes. We've got three of them: isolated storage, file, stream, and settings. And these are the three different flavors you can use. Basically, the file one will give you the area your stuff lives. The stream will give you a connection to a file in that area. And the final thing is basically a dictionary, which you can put things in, which will then be persisted for you when you save them.
That one, the isolated storage settings, is really just an easy-to-use wrapper. It is exposed as a dictionary, as it says, of string value dictionary. But underneath, of course, it will store it in a file in isolated storage. But it just makes it very easy for you to program to storing simple settings kind of things.
Yeah, they've basically wrapped a dictionary in a piece of grunt work they've done to actually,
yeah,
allow you to store these things easily. I mean, you could, if it's a very, very simple game with high score tables and things, you could just use that. There's no need to bother with files.
Yep.
So we'll talk about that in a minute or two. A couple of things you have to do to make them work. There's a namespace you have to bring in. In fact, there's two. System I.O. and isolated storage. And once you've got those, you're in business. You don't need to have any extra libraries. It's all just there. A point worth making, this stuff we're talking about applies equally to Silverlight and XNA games. So the techniques work the same way in both. So you can persist game state objects, or you can persist Silverlight settings and things, and bring them back however you like. It's up to you to find the right place in your program's life cycle to go off and fetch this stuff and then put stuff in it. That's down to you. As far as you're concerned, it's a design thing. You sit down at the start and you go, okay, we have to store this, 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 and this, and then you build a file structure, and then you put some stuff in settings, and then away you go. But it really, it's not It's not rocket science because, as I said before, that's about rockets and science, but this is actually quite easy to do. And it's basically a little piece of file store all your own. So if you can write to files, you can use this. And just to illustrate that, here's a piece of code, saving data. This is a very, very simple method, which just takes a string and puts it in a file. I have a little variable called file name, which sets the name of the file I want to use. And this thing will open up a stream, push a message to it, and then close the stream off. And so if you only want to store things in a file-based, this will do it for you.
Notice the use of the using statements in that. It's quite important to make sure that when you're dealing with things that are touching the system in this way, kind of file streams and this sort of thing, always use the using statement, which ensures that those objects are closed and disposed when you're finished with them.
Yeah, if you start leaving these things lying around, you might find things slowing down or becoming unusable because you've got old handles lying around that haven't been cleared away yet. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. The using basically gets this stuff kicked out when it should be. And so, yeah, lift that, use it as a template, and then basically put your saving behavior in there, and you'll be fine. Loading it, I think we have a bit more on this slide because it's slightly more complicated, mainly because this particular version of the code fetches a thing from the file and returns null if the file can't be found. So what you see here is that we go and get our ITID storage file for this application. We then call the exist methods on that to see if the file is there. If it is, we build a raw input stream from which we build a file reader, get the line in, close the file. I've got an exception handler which just does nothing. You may want to put a message box in there, you may want to hide it and put default settings in. Remember, the very first time you run your program, there'll be nothing there. Nope. So you have to actually live with that. There's no point during the application install process where you get told, hey, this is your install run. So the first time your program wakes up after the user's bought it, then you'll have to go, hey, no files, I'll just go and put all those into place and then go on. So you have to have a way of picking up the fact that the files aren't there and behaving sensibly.
That's worth mentioning. For those of you who perhaps did any Windows Mobile development in the past, you could actually include in your installation package some custom code that would run just during the installation. But you haven't, as Rob said, you haven't got that option with ZAP files. It stalls onto the phone, and the first time they run it, if you've got any setup logic you have to run, you'd have to kind of look in isolated storage, say, is my app file in there already? And if it isn't, then you've got your initialization logic you're going to have to run.
Yeah, so
next time they run it, it'll be there, of course.
So for games, you might want to sort of, for the first time it's there, you want to put your name in, blah, 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 and so you go on. Although for a game, you can also, of course, think about using the gamertag services so that you can get the user's Xbox Live gamer ID and use that to store the data, which is kind of fun. So there you are. It really is that simple. And to prove it's simple, I'm going to make it work from scratch. There's an itching powder joke there somewhere. If you use itching powder, you can make things work from scratch.
Yes. Moving on.
Yes, the best jokes are the ones you make up on the fly. Okay. So what I have here is really, really simple. If I just open up the main page, it's basically a text box and a couple of buttons, and I can put data into my text field and bring them out again. It just shows that we can call through. The very first time you run it on the emulator, here's my demo thing, we will, of course, have an empty store. So if I press the run button now, there'll be a rattling noise on the hard drive of my machine.
And you'll go, nothing there.
It'll basically go, oh gosh, I didn't find that file. Although computers don't say gosh very often, I think they should say it more. Rather than saying error at line 50, it's gosh, we've had an error at line 50. That'd be great. But anyway, I digress. So we're going to have an empty text box. And what I'll show you here is that the two methods that I've written have been bound to the save and load. And as you can see, at the moment, the box is empty. If I go in here and just type R O B space is G R A T E. It's about right. Okay. And I hit save. Then what will happen now is that gets written back to the file. If I load it, of course, it'll just put the same thing back on there, which is kind of boring. So what I will do is I'll stop the program.
Ooh.
Andy's looking worried. And I'll run the program again.
Is this wise?
What I'll do it a different way. I'll go into here, and I'll find that because the program has been put into the emulator, it's still there. So I can run this actually inside the emulator. I'm not using Studio now. Fire it up like that, and up comes Robbie's Great.
Awesome.
Because the second time I've run the program, it's actually used the stored storage provided by the emulation. That will go away when I shut this program down. But if you do want to test your storage behaviors, you can use the emulator until you power it down.
Yeah, sorry, let's clarify that point. Yep. By when you close the, when you actually completely close the emulator, so
it
hit the X,
it
doesn't have any, when next time you start it up, it starts like fresh from the factory, so it doesn't persist your isolated storage, anything you stored away in there, in between runs from cold of the emulator.
So it would be lovely if it did, but it doesn't, so there you are. But that's effectively, take a look at the code if you want to have a look at my sleeve. You'd see my arm, because there's nothing else there. If I just go in here, we've got just bindings to those buttons. I'm not doing all this fancy property binding stuff. I'm doing it all in code behind, but there's my save, there's my load, and there's my save button click and load button click that call through.
Yep.
And so you can pick this up and run with it. No
yeah. Now, this example, of course, is just storing simple text files, text to away to files. But obviously, I'm sure you're going to tell us we can actually store much more complex objects than that.
Oh, yes, yes. If we keep on going, if I go back to my deck now, if I go from current slide, we've had our demo. What you can do, and I mentioned it a bit later, is yes, if you want to serialize to these things, you can do that. So you can take a big object and just push it out by using a serializer to do that. There's some issues about that I'll mention a bit later on.
Okay.
But yes, you can do that. You can make it as simple or as complex as you like. You can build your own file hierarchy. I've even seen people write browsing programs that will go through and print out and display all the files in the storage just by iterating through, because you can do get directory contents and iterate through and find things.
Actually, those of you who have done development with .NET, with desktop PCs, regular system.file.io kind of classes.
It's all the stuff.
It's the same stuff. It just happens to be you have this preliminary step to get the isolated storage area.
Yeah.
For the application, and that becomes like a disk drive, effectively.
Yeah. Once you have that handle, then everything else happens in relation to that. This is the other way of doing it, the object-based way. If I'm saying things like usernames or text colors or passwords, you can put passwords in this thing with a degree of confidence, would you say, sir? I mean, there's no other program than yours can see this space, so unless somebody hacks your phone in some evil way and gets inside
In theory,
there.
If somebody got your phone, dismantled it, and
that's
pulled
true.
Out the RAM, the
if
chip,
they did that,
and
they,
then
they
hooked
could...
it up to some expensive equipment, and
I think if it was me, I'd probably encrypt it because I'm a nervous person. But for the purposes of security, once you put stuff in here,
it's isolated storage. Only your app can get at it.
But this stuff is the simple stuff. What color screen do they want? What's their present high score? Blah blah blah. It's called the application settings object, and it lives in the same place.
Or indeed, if your app has a settings page, because there's some preferences. I mean, maybe you can choose between having metric measurements or
anything like that.
Imperial style, English style, whatever.
All that kind of good stuff. Language options, perhaps. Even.
Yeah.
So here we go. This is the same principle. I have a message I want to store and a name I want to give it. And so I get hold of my settings object and just set the thing as I would an element in a dictionary. The thing you have to remember, which I forgot, so I spent half an hour saying, this is not working, it is stupid, I have failed, is you must call the save method on this. The settings object will effectively pick up things and let you put stuff in it, but it isn't until you call that save, it actually writes it back to non-volatile memory. So if your program's going to sort of stop, then call that save method, because that's when it gets pushed back into the actual main storage. Yep. That's when the magic happens, okay? Bottom bullet point. Remember to call save when you finish adding keys. And the other thing which you should also don't forget the name of the key and bring back a different one, because that won't work either. I've done that too. yesterday was not a good day. Here you go. Again, normal rules apply. It's like a dictionary. If you can't find the thing, a dictionary will throw an exception, and so will the one that's in storage. So use the contains method to say, is it there? And if it is, we'll go off and get it. If it isn't, this thing returns null, so I know that there's nothing there. And so, yeah, do be aware of that one. And again, another tiny demo, the merest hint of tininess, which I can, I'll just clobber that. And then I'll go back to here, and I'll go off and get my other demo. You can get all these, of course, from the usual place. Feel free to take them, put them in your own programs, become unfeasibly rich, and then come back and laugh at us.
Yep.
Because we're used to that. So exactly the same looking front end, which means you won't have to take too long to figure out precisely how I built this. And then if I hit run now, then the program will run. And up we come. And we're getting our emulator. And again, I can put hello in there. And put save. And that's actually put it in the dictionary and persisted it. And so now if I stop the program, do studio that time. Actually, that was a stupid thing to do, you know.
No, well, it should be okay.
It'll be okay this time. One of the things to bear in mind, if you've got any kind of event handlers in your program, which actually are supposed to fire and tidy things up when the program ends, do not press stop in studio.
Well,
they don't get run.
In fact, on the very next talk in this series, we're going to be looking at application lifecycle. Yeah. And if you are, yeah, what Rob is saying is that we have events that firing as your user is exiting your application in the proper way.
Yeah.
So if you've got logic in those, yeah, killing it in studio, obviously those are not going to run. So
it's very daft.
If your exit logic was to save data, well, it won't happen.
But this, of course, has worked fine because the word hello has appeared. And in fact, in that emulator, we now have a file containing Rob is great and a settings object with hello in it for this application and no other.
Yep.
Right, so jolly good. In that case, then we can go back to our presentations. Cunning use of Alt-Tab.
Are you just going to just prove the point, show the code for that?
Yes, I can. Yes, you're a doubting person, aren't you?
Just like a completist, me.
He's a completist. You make a very good programmer one day. So I'll just make that bigger. And so there you go. There's load string and save string.
There you go.
I haven't used the same program twice.
It's the code off the slides, in fact.
Absolutely. So. You would almost think the words cut and paste would appear in the conversation at some point in a few seconds. Who would have thought it?
Pure coincidence.
Pure coincidence. One of the weird things that I've noticed is that if you've got the emulator up, things like Alt-Tab don't always work very well.
Well, that's because the emulator itself is a virtual machine.
Ah, okay. And
it is a VM, and it does weird things with your keyboard focus.
Yes. So, few caveats and things to take this further. There are no quotas on Windows Phone.
No, desktop Silverlight, you are limited to a modest amount of storage that you can use, and if you want to exceed, you can ask for more in desktop Silverlight and browser-based Silverlight, but your user gets a pop-up or something, don't they, and say, do you authorize this program
this?
To take another 30 gigs of space?
Yeah. In the case of this, you could write an evil denial of service app that basically filled the memory full of Hello World or Robbie's Great if you wanted to. That would be really stupid and unfriendly and would not get you very good reviews, but it is possible. So if your program goes nuts and gets stuck in a loop or anything, then you will fill this thing up. There's nothing in there that will say, hey, wow, please hold back a bit. Be very careful about how you use the space. It's as much a thing about speed as it is about actually saving memory, because the kind of non-volatile storage these devices use is fairly slow to read and really slow to write. So if you have the habit of storing and retrieving large amounts of data in your application, it's going to take a long time to start up and a long time to shut down, and you don't want that. So be very careful about your space usage. Be transparent about it. Try and work out and sort of predict up front how much you're going to have. Get rid of temporary files. If you've got a lot of data, then push it somewhere else.
If you've got an app that kind of stores history, for example, and the user can look at a history of stuff they've done with this app in the past, you'd keep recent history on the phone, but if you either will need to put some logic in to automatically purge stuff over a certain age, as Rob says, maybe if you still want to make that available, upload it to a cloud service, and then if they want to, they really want to get stuff that's not on the phone anymore, you can pull it back down.
Yes, so be sensible. Another trick which is worth playing is that you can use serialization, which is a really powerful way to take a large structured object and then persist it somewhere. That's probably what the settings object does when it pushes your object into the file when you call save. But again, there's a performance hit here, and that means that it may take a while to bring the object back in again. If that's the case, think about firing a thread off. Remember, you have like a, as we'll see later, you have like a 10-second rule. You have 10 seconds after the user said, I want to play this, before your first screen comes up. If your program is spending ages bringing data back in on the main UI, on the first thread that starts running in your application, then you might miss that.
Hey, it's worth mentioning in this context that the Rob's demo there just showed storing a string in the isolated storage settings object dictionary. But that is a string object dictionary, so you can store any object. Yeah. I mean, it happened to be a string, but you could stick a fairly complex object into the isolated storage settings. And
The first thing you should do in any kind of thing like this is to think in terms of putting your lumps of data into objects, because as soon as you do that, quite as you said, you can basically attach those to the settings object, and they'll get saved for you as though by magic. And so, from that point of view, definitely a trick worth playing. But also, as I say, plan this. I mean, we say it's about programming. It always ends up in planning. If you plan the way it's going to look, if you plan your menus, if you plan how the storage will be used, it goes an awful lot better. The code-like-hell approach, which some people use, and then solve the problems as we hit them, isn't really a plan in this particular environment. So keep that in mind. If you want to use a database in your application, then there's some bad news and some good news. The bad news is there is no built-in client-side database on the present version of Windows Phone. But, as Andy knows, there are ways you can get around this.
Indeed, yes. So there's a couple of things, and this new solution's turning up all the time, actually, if you search on the internet. But there is this Sterling project on Coplex, which looks very interesting, so you can go and have a look at that. There's also Perst database, which is an open source database that's already used extensively on other platforms, mm-hmm. such as Java and things. But there is a full .NET version of it, and I had a look at that, and we were able to port it to run under Windows Phone. So it's a full database, indexed database, full text search even, that sits in your isolated storage, and you can use that on the phone. And if you go and look at my blog, you can there's a good demo there, and you can see how it works. It's very impressive.
So there you have it. It's actually very easy to persist data in the phone, either as an object which you just lob things at, or as a bunch of files you want to structure how you like. And in the next session, we're going to tell you why you need to be able to do this.
One of the main things, a very important session on the application lifecycle management. Essential viewing for everybody who's going to be writing Silverlight and XNA apps for Windows Phone 7.